Thanksgiving Eve on Today in Ohio, the news podcast discussion from Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. We will not have an episode Thursday, and we will not have an episode Friday. We'll be back on Monday to catch up with everything that happens today through then. I'm Chris Quinn, here with my colleagues Laura Johnston and Lisa Garvin. Layla Tassi is taking her time off. Actually, I think, Laura, you're going to be off the rest of the day, but you're being a great trooper by participating in the podcast.
I stole the computer back from my kids, like my other computer. I was like, I need them both.
Well, I appreciate you doing it, and I wish you both and everybody who listens a happy Thanksgiving. Let's talk about some interesting stories on our plate. Should pharmacy companies be much more willing to settle opioid lawsuits now that they've heard the verdict of a Northeast Ohio jury on whether they are partly responsible for the fatal epidemic? Lisa, I was betting the pharmacies would win. I thought their argument that they don't decide who gets it, they just fill the orders of doctors, would be a winning one. I was wrong.
Well, and they are not really, I'm not sure that this verdict will have them doing anything. You know, I really believe that they're going to appeal. I mean, there were three defendants in this trial, Walgreens, Walmart, and CVS. Walgreens lawyers have already signaled that they're going to appeal. They called it a flawed verdict. And there was a mistrial request that was asked early in the trial. It was not granted. The mistrial was over the fact that a juror did some outside research on the case, but federal judge Dan Polster decided to go ahead. So, and no monetary damages have been mentioned yet. That'll be later on. Judge Polster will decide what the monetary damages are. But the jury deliberated over 6 days. This is the very first case in the U.S. involving pharmacies. But it looks bad. I get it. You know, pharmacies are kind of caught in the middle. You know, they said, well, we were just filling legitimate prescriptions, but there were a lot of legitimate prescriptions, and they claimed that they, shut down any suspicious looking orders. But when you look at Lake and Trumbull counties, which is what this trial focused on, there were 80 million pills that went through Trumbull County with a population of only 200,000, and that was between 2006 and 2012. Lake County saw 60 million pills go through with a population of about 230,000. So I don't know, that looks kind of suspicious to me as a pharmacist, but I get what they're saying. I mean, they do have to fill these prescriptions that they get, but I don't know, that's not a great argument.
Well, I think what the argument of the people suing was that you should have known that this was so ridiculously over the top that you should have known it was bad, that you are reckless in not noticing it, and for that you're held liable. You can't really argue that they should have seen this. They should have raised the flag and said, you know, we are processing way more opioids than would seem reasonable. You know, talk to the DEA, talk to somebody. And the fact that they didn't, the jury found you should have. And so, you know, more, good. It's holding them accountable for a role. I figured that they would just say, look, we doctors tell us what to do. Who are we to question it? But they did nothing to try and stop it. And a whole lot of people died and suffered as a result of their inaction. You can appeal. You can, you know, there's lots of reasons you can appeal. But often courts respect the jury verdict. I am thrown by the lack of a mistrial. I mean, you had a juror that was going out, getting documents, right, Bringing them in, and sharing it with other jurors. That usually would be an automatic mistrial. And I don't know what Polster was thinking there.
Yeah, and there is, and that kind of opens the door for an appeal, I think, right there. But, they said they filled the legitimate prescriptions, but they also said that they did flag some, and they said nothing went to pill mills or doctors that were, you know, filing all these, you know, numbers of prescriptions. But still, they're kind of the final gate between the patient and the doctor. They're the ones who give out the drugs. I just feel like you said, you know, they really should have had raised some red flags. Giant Eagle and Rite Aid were also part of this lawsuit, but they settled out of court. We don't know what the damages were. That was an undisclosed amount. So maybe they saw the writing on the wall and said, let's get out of this before it looks really bad in trial. So, yeah, we'll see. And, you know, there is some precedent. Of course, this was against Johnson & Johnson, a manufacturer of drugs. But the Oklahoma Supreme Court overturned a 2019 judgment against Johnson & Johnson that was $465 million. So there's another legal precedent there in case these pharmacies want to appeal and go after it.
Well, we'll have to see how they all go, and we'll be following the appeals. It's Today in Ohio. Why is violence in schools up so much this year, with some districts even going to in-home instruction for weeks at a time to calm the waters? Laura, because of what's been happening, we took a deeper look. What did we find?
You can blame the pandemic, just like everything else. This isn't just kids getting in fights with each other. This is bad. We're talking about physical fights, threats of violence, bomb threats, guns, both real and fake, have all been reported at schools this fall. You talked about going online. That's what Bedford High School did. They moved to remote learning for about a week because of fights and threats. The Akron Public Schools Superintendent and Teachers Union have been meeting to discuss this highly disturbing student behavior. But the psychologist that Kaylee Remington talked to, and I've got to say she did a great job with the story, she said it's getting to the point where kids are getting injured. They're throwing books at each other, cursing at teachers. It's kind of a free-for-all. And a lot of it is just stressed. Everyone is stressed. The parents are stressed. Think about all the fights they've had at school board meetings. It's all funneling down to these kids. We're all fed up. There's a lot of mental health issues. We've reported on that a lot during the pandemic. And that this anger and irritability can be a symptom of depression in children that can lead to aggressive behavior.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised it was the main thing was the anxiety of the pandemic. I wondered whether the incivility we saw in the battle over critical race theory, which was a fictional issue because it's not taught in schools, but parents were showing up at school board meetings screaming, whether that was bleeding down to the kids, you know, absorbing what the adults were doing. But that's not really what it was. It's really just the great anxiety that this pandemic continues to instill in all of us.
Right. Plus, there's a couple other things that are offshoots of the pandemic. Think about all the time that kids were outside the classroom. They weren't in school. Even all last year, a lot of kids were remote or hybrid, and they missed out on that social development of interacting with other kids. So they might just be not used to being in school all of these hours every week. They missed out on time with their peers. They missed out on developing friendships and relationships. And I mean, just... I think the same thing with the CRT. I think it's all an offshoot of the same thing. Like, we're all putting our anxiety into something, and there's not a lot of places for it to go. So the superintendents are really aware of this. They're working with their students. They're trying to be proactive rather than reactive and dealing with social emotional learning and helping kids cope rather than just dealing with the violence in the aftermath.
Okay. You're listening to Today in Ohio. What does the Lake County Commissioner, whose name is front and center in the scandalous attempt to breach the county's election computers, have to say about his role? Lisa, he's making some pretty strong statements. The criminal investigation into this will reveal all the truth. I'm surprised at how strongly he is wording his claims.
Yeah, Commissioner John Hammercheck made a statement at the county commissioner's court meeting yesterday saying that this was false and misleading information that's going around in the media, and he has absolutely no knowledge of any attempted breach of the election's computers. I guess they're doing their own investigation, and he said he will share the results of that information gathering with commissioners when it's ready. But records compiled by Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer indicate that he did use his badge, or someone used his badge, several times to access the fifth floor. And that was during 4 and 9 o'clock p.m. on May 4th. And there was a non-network laptop that was connected to the county network. We have to say they did not breach the elections computers. They're on a separate network and behind some firewalls. There is an investigation going on by the Ohio Attorney General and the FBI. But There was a precinct election worker at the meeting yesterday. Lois Osborne is her name, and she's already calling for Hammercheck's censure. Of course, the commissioner said no, and she said that the county Democratic Party will ask for Hammercheck's resignation at their meeting on December 2nd, so we'll see. But Secretary of State Frank LaRose, he believes that the person came from another state. And he also says that the vigilante, he called it a vigilante action, and it's similar to an incident that happened in Colorado. So I think the facts are kind of clear that his badge was used to access that floor. Whether he had control of that badge, we just don't know.
Well, but he went further. He said no attempt was made to get into elections mm-hmm. computer. And that's patently ridiculous. I mean, there was an attempt made. That's mm-hmm. clear. They're just trying to figure out who did it. And when he was further questioned, well, how was your badge used? All he said was, I stand by my statement. I mean, look, sometimes the best defense is a good offense. And he's coming out very offensively saying, no, this didn't happen. Clearly something happened. Clearly his badge was used for it to happen. So either he was lax about the control of his badge, or he let somebody in there. And forgive me, I don't really care about the Lake County investigation. It has zero credibility. What I'll count on is the FBI investigation to get to the truth. Mr. Hammercheck can provide all the information he wants. We're going to trust the outsiders to tell us what actually happened in this county.
I'm sure he's probably sweating bullets now, whether he did it or not. It's just, he puts him in a kind of an untenable position at this point.
Well, to say it didn't happen is the untenable part. The smart person in this says, look, the state, the feds, they're investigating. I feel certain that when it's over, my name will be cleared, but I'm not going to say anything that could get in the way of the investigation. We'll talk later. He didn't do that. He did what the smart person doesn't do. He came out and said no attempt was made. I mean, the pillow guy had the data. Mm-hmm. This was used in one of his loony, you know, the election was stolen things. They had the packets of data that were transferred from county computers after somebody used this guy's card. So good luck. We can't wait to see what the FBI and the Attorney General find. You're listening to Today in Ohio. How is Ohio Governor Mike DeWine accepting some extra damage to Ohio highways to help overcome the nation's supply chain issues? Laura, we always lose sight of the fact that the trucks on the turnpike and the highways do so much more damage to the roads than passenger cars, and that's why there's a weight limit. But Mike DeWine, not so much worried about damage to the roads. Maybe it's because he's going to use all that infrastructure money coming from Joe Biden to fix them.
Maybe. Right now, he says he just wants to address the supply chain issues and the shortages that we're seeing and delays. So he reinstituted this pandemic-era order that allows trucks to carry an additional 10,000 pounds of freight over the normal 80,000-pound limit without needing to get a permit beforehand. So I don't know if they've paid for this permit in the past, but between June of 2020 and June of this year, they didn't have to. And this allows truckers to save about an hour of paperwork from having to submit it beforehand. They still have to report to the state officials where they traveled within 24 hours at the end of their trip. So I'm not sure. Obviously they've been allowed to do this in the past. They just have to get a permit. So this is a saving time thing. I don't know if it's costing the state. I would think it would end up costing the state a lot more money.
Well, it's going to cost money because it wears out the roads. I mean, it's not done often, but whenever you see the difference in what a truck does to the roads versus the cars, it's enormous. So, you know, next year or the year after, when you're stuck in orange barrel season, say thank you, Mike DeWine, for destroying the roads. Again, you know, they're getting a ton of money from the Democratic Joe Biden administration, which our attorney general keeps suing for infrastructure, so maybe he's figuring, well, we're going to be replacing a lot of roadway anyway, so who cares if we damage it?
At least on the turnpike, they paid it to take all of that freight, right? Every other interstate highway in Ohio, it doesn't matter. So, but I guess 15 Republican governors are making similar requests in this, what they call Operation Open Roads. And this ranges from asking to change regulations that allow the minimum age for truckers to drive across state lines to be lowered. I didn't even know that was a thing. They want some policies reversed, like suspending the vaccine mandate. And basically, they're just pushing Joe Biden for opening up roads even more.
Well, we should come back sometime in December and do the story about how much wear and tear a heavy truck does the macadam.
Plus, there's like actual data now, right? Because I guess we did this for a year. I didn't realize we were doing it. So could we tell if the roads wore out faster in that year than in a regular year?
Yeah, we'll have to see. I know the science is out there. I've read the stories before. We just should bring it back. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Based on history, should we be worried? First, COVID cases were back at near record levels in Michigan. Now they are quite high in Northwest Ohio. Is the Cleveland area next? That's what happened when the pandemic began, for anybody that remembers that progression. What's the trend in the far west part of the state, Lisa?
Yeah, it looks like it's moving east from Michigan. In Northwest Ohio this week, there were 742 cases per 100,000 population. Compare that to Southwest Ohio that only had about 402 cases per 100,000. So yes, the trend is trending upward. Ohio Department of Health Director Dr. Bruce Vanderhoff says this, again, is mostly due to unvaccinated people. However, he was questioned yesterday during his statement that, you know, he was asked about the rise of deaths, breakthrough cases. There are people who have been vaccinated who are dying in Lorain and Tuscarawas County, apparently in significant numbers, although we haven't seen exact numbers. He said that because over 65 people were the first to be vaccinated way back at the beginning of the year, their protection is probably waning by now. And he says this is really a call for people who have been vaccinated to get their boosters, especially if they're over age 65. So, yeah, the trend is not looking good. I mean, we're talking even in the Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer, we have articles about maybe you should ask your Thanksgiving guests, you know, to mask up or provide their vaccination card. So, yeah, it seems like it's kind of sweeping eastward towards Northeast Ohio.
Yeah, I wish the Biden administration would have allowed everybody to get the booster well in advance of the 2 weeks you need before Thanksgiving to be fully protected. They just did it, which doesn't give people time to get that before Thanksgiving. It seems like a major fumble by the Biden administration, which up till now has done pretty smartly with all things vaccine. We'll have to see if it comes here just like it did before. It's like a tidal wave of cases that started in Michigan is cascading in our direction. Boo Michigan, right? Boo Michigan. There'll be a lot of booing in Michigan this weekend. You're listening to Today in Ohio. How many different lawsuits has Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost now filed against the Joe Biden administration compared to the number he filed against the Donald Trump administration, which I think was none? Is it possible this is more about party than right and wrong? Laura, what's the latest salvo he has filed?
So this is the third lawsuit just alone dealing with the vaccine mandate. That he's already joined lawsuits seeking to overturn the Biden administration's mandate for federal contractors and for companies that employ at least 100 people. So the lawsuit was originally filed by Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry. He's a Republican, which that's what you expect, right? Another 12 attorney generals have also signed on, and they're looking to overturn this mandate that requires 17 million staffers at healthcare facilities that participate in Medicare and Medicaid programs to be fully vaccinated by January 4th, unless, of course, they have a medical or religious exemption. So I don't know why you can't combine these all into one lawsuit.
Well, I guess we should say at least this is an Ohio issue. When he sues the Biden administration over immigration policies, he makes tortured arguments for why it's a factor for a state that is, you know, very far from the southern border. But it seems like he just likes to sue the Democrats because he never really went after the Republicans. It was fascinating that even with the census, when the Trump administration was in office and the census was fumbling about, you heard nary a word from him. But the minute the Biden administration came in, Yost comes championing his Ohio to sue the census.
Right. It had been like 2 months. They'd been working on the census, the 2020 census, not the 2021 census.
Yeah, you really have to question his good faith as attorney general.
And he's arguing that it's an unlawful use of executive power and the president does not have the authority to make healthcare decisions for Americans, which seems just blatantly I mean, blah, blah, blah. The government makes a lot of healthcare decisions for Americans.
I don't know what he's thinking. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Is Opportunity Corridor, open just over 1 week, already on its way to erasing a food desert on Cleveland's east side? What's the development plan that Cleveland City Council gave incentives to this week? Lisa, this is amazing to me how quickly this is happening.
Really, and it's very heartening, too. It makes you wonder whether we need a police department there to spur development. But anyway, I digress. City Council.
I wrote a column about that last weekend.
You did, and we've talked about it before. City Council yesterday approved $2.3 million in tax increment financing to Fairmount Properties of Orange, and this is a 30-year deal. Fairmount Properties is planning to build a 40,000-square-foot Meijer grocery store with a parking garage and also a five-story apartment building that will have 190 market-rate apartments, you know, ranging from tiny little micro units to larger ones. We want to say that school district taxes will not be affected by this deal. They will also get a 15-year tax abatement for this project. The whole project will be about $57 million. They hope to have it done by the summer of 2023. Of course, this is part of a larger Innovation Square project where they want to look at about 500 apartments overall, mostly for medical students and workers that work in University Circle or may go to school at Case since it's so close by. And if I could mention something that we didn't get to earlier this week, there was another development along the Opportunity Corridor where the City Council gave Orlando Baking, they approved plans for a cold storage facility there. They're going to sell land to Orlando Baking Company for a 150,000 square foot cold storage facility. Orlando would use 50,000 square feet of that and then lease the remainder to local grocers and food service industries. And this would create 70 new jobs. So, I mean, as soon as that road opened, things just started popping, which is great to see.
Well, that was why I wrote the column. As you drive down that road, it's inevitable to me that that will develop. The whole purpose of getting development into that undeveloped part of town, it's going to happen. It's just, it's aching for it. The amount of wealth going, commuting on that road from the Cleveland Clinic and University Hospitals and Case is huge. And so people will stop at a grocery store to get dinner to go home. And you can see restaurants and other things going up there, which does get at the question of why are we building the police headquarters there? I wrote a column over the weekend explaining why we're not pursuing that story. You know, we're all over
right.
the jail and justice center. We're analyzing every element of that. Our problem with the police station is the building that our newsroom is in was the candidate for that in 2017. It would have been the perfect police station, we said. You know, it's a city block. It has a parking garage, tons of parking. It's centrally located. I mean, it was ideal. It fell apart for myriad reasons, many of which have now dissolved away. But I had to explain, we're not doing the analysis. We're not pursuing it. I got a lot of blowback from readers about that, saying, look, yes, you have a conflict, but there's nobody else in town that will do the watchdog work that you do. You should do this. And so I'm kind of on my heels on this. I'm not sure what we'll do. I'm kind of waiting to see whether the Justin Bibb administration will take another look at this, because I think they could probably save a good deal of money by switching back to the original plan. But if they don't, I don't know, we may have to assign somebody. My problem with this, quite frankly, is I would be highly suspicious as a reader of that story. I would look at that and think, come on, man, you're just trying to sell your building. And if I have that feeling, I don't want to sow doubts with our readers about our integrity. Integrity is everything. So I don't know what to do.
Yeah, but it is a good story. I mean, is WKYC going to take it up? Are any of the TV stations going to take it up? I don't think they will. Will the Cleveland Scene? I mean, maybe now that you mentioned it in your letter, some other media will take it up. I just don't see it.
They don't have the firepower. I just don't see anybody doing the deep dive on that. I mean, the readers pointed out we're really the only ones that do that kind of work, which we've done. I mean, if you look at what we've done with the Justice Center and the jail, nobody's touched the level of depth that we've put into that. So I don't know. It's interesting. But the one thing that is clear is Opportunity Corridor is already proving to be what the vision was when it started 20 years ago. And a grocery store is the first thing that was needed out there. So it's a great story. Good for city council for giving it the inducements and incentives that it needed. You're listening to Today in Ohio. How much will Ohioans spend on holiday shopping this year? Laura, tomorrow's Thanksgiving, so now I think it's safe to talk about holiday shopping.
Okay, well, it's a whole lot of money. We're talking about $31.4 billion. And that's a sharp 7.3% increase from 2020. And it's not just a guess. This is a study from the Ohio Council of Retail Merchants and the University of Cincinnati's Economic Center. They look at multiple factors, including employment, wages, household debt, and inflation. They actually look city by city at the metro areas to try to guess how much we're going to be up. Greater Cleveland's going to be a little less. It's 2.7%. Akron, apparently, is going to be very frugal because they're going to be up 0.4%.
So did the study say what percentage of that money will be spent on Legos and Bakugans?
If you're talking about my family, that's where the bulk of the Christmas spending goes, is Legos. But it talks about consumer confidence is very high. People have higher wages and an improving labor market. And stores have made it super easy with online and curbside pickup options. Plus, I think, you know, there's been a lot of marketing this year that's like, because of shortages, and we've all been dealing with them for a year or more, like, or buy early. And so people aren't waiting around for the best deals or thinking maybe I'm going to get this. I think they're just going ahead and doing it because they don't want to be shut out and have their kid crying that they didn't get this toy they wanted.
Yeah, Legos and Bakugans. I got a lesson last weekend from a five-year-old on the whole culture of the Bakugan, which I wasn't even aware.
I have never heard of this. I guess my kids are just past that now.
Yeah, it's a little sphere or a cube or a square that when you throw it on the floor, it opens up into a monster of some sort, and then you can attach them to make big monsters. It's fascinating when a five-year-old.
I was going to say your grandson's asking these for Christmas.
No, he has them, and he was showing us how they work. And you know, it's always fun to have a five-year-old explain another world that you're unaware of. You are listening to Today in Ohio. How many pages of Thursday's Plain Dealer will be filled with notes by people in Northeast Ohio about what they are grateful for and what brings them joy? Laura, I'm tickled by the response we got. We told people we want to have a Thanksgiving edition of the Plain Dealer that's filled with what we find joy in. We've all lived through 21 months of hell, and we need to look around and say, yes, but... And man, did people respond. So how many pages of the Plain Dealer are we dedicating to this?
I went back and forth with Skip Hall, our print lab director, on like, how many pages can we get? Can we get some more pages? But yeah, 10. This is going to be a real treat. We got more than 300 responses from people. And remember, this is limited to 640 characters because we wanted people to really make their thoughts concise. So this is a whole lot of people. And a lot of people sent us photos as well, which are really sweet. This is by readers and for readers. People wrote and told us obviously what they're grateful for. A lot of family and friends, you expect to see that. New babies, health, their church was a big one. The internet, being able to connect with other family members and friends across the miles. There are a lot of messages about grandchildren, though. I don't see so many people that were like, I'm grateful for my kids, but there were a whole lot of people that said they were grateful for the grandchildren.
Well, what is nice about it is that people came flying out to do it, and those are the people who made the deadline. They were still coming after the deadline, and those will be online, but we did have to cap it somewhere. We were not expecting to do 10 pages. We did this in 2007. And I think we had a page and a half. I mean, so
people are just so much more grateful now.
And it's heartfelt and it's good. I don't know that anybody's going to read 10 full pages,
Well, you can parse it out over the whole weekend. We have days off. So just like read a page at a time. Actually, I was really, really kind of wowed to see we had a whole bunch of high school kids writing in that those will be online, and they were very thankful for their friends and family. It was very sweet. People were grateful for libraries. I mean, things that you're not necessarily going to go around the table and say at Thanksgiving, but it's like a nice warm hug. So hopefully people enjoy it.
Yeah, we touched a nerve, and it's good that we're able to do it. So check it out tomorrow on cleveland.com and in the Plain Dealer. We'll be rolling them out for a couple days on cleveland.com. You're listening to Today in Ohio. That does it. I want to thank everybody on this eve of the Day of Thanks for listening to this podcast. The growth of the audience has been enormous. We're going to be doing a survey to find out what people want from it because we have so many more listeners. And we appreciate that. That's given up part of your day to engage with us. We appreciate when you send us notes with your thoughts, your questions, your arguments about what you've heard here. We want it all at cquinn@cleveland.com. Have a great Thanksgiving. Have a great Thanksgiving, Laura. Have a great Thanksgiving, Lisa. And to our absent Layla, the same. We'll be back Monday.